Welcome to the So Why podcast with Step Care Solutions. This podcast aims to explore issues and challenges, as well as ideas and solutions leading to strengthening support for mental wellness and recovery. My name is Alexa Bull, Director of Co-Design and Knowledge Exchange at Step Care Solutions, and I will be your host for this episode. Like many other provinces and territories, the Northwest Territories had one pathway for people seeking support for their mental health. Recognizing that people have diverse needs and their journeys are not always linear, the territory was exploring a new way of doing things that would help people get the type of support they need when they need it. Drawn to its intuitive approach, in 2020, Northwest Territories made the decision to start implementing Step Care 2.0. Transformation began and the system started to shift. There are now multiple ways of accessing different types of care with minimal barriers, allowing for quick, easy access. The newly released report, Partnering Together for Person and Family-Centric Care, done in partnership with the Government of Northwest Territories, the Mental Health Commission of Canada, and Step Care Solutions, highlights the impact of these changes. The outcomes match the excitement of those who have been a part of it, including a 79% reduction in wait times for mental wellness counseling. Today, we are joined by Carly Straker, Manager of Systems Quality and Integration in Mental Wellness and Substance Use Health with the Government of Northwest Territories. Carly was born and raised on the traditional territory of the Yellowknife Dene and Yellowknife Northwest Territories. She is mama to a little one who is total sunlight. Carly has a master's degree in clinical social work and has spent 2 decades working, advocating, learning, and leading frontline operational and systems level capacities within mental wellness and substance use health, trauma, crisis, and emergency response, and more, with children, youth, adults, and families, both in urban and rural settings across Canada. With a passion for whole health, she coaches weightlifting, children's sports, and spends as much time as she can in nature with her daughter, friends, and family, recognizing the invaluable impacts of these connections. While working in her current role with the Government of the Northwest Territories, Carly has led systems change through championing of recovery-oriented person and family-centered care and the recent implementation of the Step Care 2.0 model. Hi, Carly. Thank you so much for joining us on the So Why podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, very exciting stuff happening in Northwest Territories, exciting stuff happening with the Step Care 2.0 implementation. But I'm wondering if we could maybe just start out talking about what were some of the reasons that prompted you to explore a change in the way that the mental health system was functioning in Northwest Territories?
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of think back to 2019, and our government had committed at that time to increasing the number of culturally safe, respectful, community-based wellness and recovery programming across the NWT. We really wanted to reduce wait times in counseling and offer more options for care, so really increase access. We were finding that this one-way approach to care just wasn't working for people. And so we had kind of done a lot of engagement across the NWT. We had talked to people in different communities and regions, people who worked within the system and people who with lived and living expertise. We kind of did some research and just really searched out how people were experiencing the system and what ways could we could do things better. And it kind of led us to Step Care 2.0. So instead of having to sort of reinvent the wheel, we found a framework that really fit what we were looking for and kind of reached out to Peter after that. And here we are.
I love that approach, talking to people, finding out how they're experiencing the system, hearing their experiences across the territory and how they differ in different places. I think that's really important place to start. And I'm wondering what specifically about Step Care 2.0 did you really find appealing as a model to implement to sort of generate some of that change you were hoping for?
Yeah, I think a lot of it aligned with what we were seeing and hearing and feeling ourselves in the North. So it offered options for people as opposed to this one pathway to care. So whereas previously in the NWT, if somebody wanted to reach out for counseling through our community counseling program, they would call, make an appointment for an intake, they would have an intake appointment, and then they would be put on a wait list. And people were waiting in some areas really long, so months. We even heard stories of people waiting for years to get in to see a counselor. And so for us, we decided that that wasn't a meaningful or accessible program. And so we really needed to find ways to do that differently and to expand options for people across the North. We also recognize that what works for one person doesn't work for another. And so we kept hearing these things over and over when we looked at Step Care 2.0 and in different discussions with Step Care Solutions and the Mental Health Commission of Canada teams. So we really loved that a lot of the values were around self-direction and empowerment and strengths-based and broad and peer support, respect, responsiveness, hope, all of those kind of components were really important to us. The ability to value informal supports as much as formal supports and bring things in and have a lot of support from community and different pathways to care, things that people could access on their own in combination with maybe more formal supports, and that there was a lot of choice there. So we could see in the North that we didn't have a lot of options, and Step Care 2.0 was all about really expanding that and providing a buffet of options for people to choose from. So we started exploring what that could look like here in the NWT.
That's amazing. It sounds like there was a lot of great alignment with what you were hoping to do and the Step Care 2.0 model. And I love how, you know, the Step Care 2.0 model gave you the opportunity to think about how to build on the strengths that you do have and expand that buffet of options to give people access to more diverse types of services and supports, including informal supports as well. Mm-hmm.
And we could really recognize that some communities and regions in the North or some areas were already doing this work. They were already kind of functioning in this way. So some places already did have sort of same day drop-in options, or they were really strongly connected with community supports or peer support. And so we really did just want to build on that and expand on that. And it fit well with what we wanted and also what people had been doing in different ways.
I love that strength-based approach, and then sort of just building off of what some folks are already doing and expanding some of those great practices that were really working well for people. But I can imagine, you know, embarking on a change across an entire territory like Northwest Territories, there's lots of challenges in that too. And change is always hard for people. So I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about the change process and what you learned throughout that journey.
For sure. So the North, if people aren't familiar with the NWT, it's a really vast territory. It's a huge geographical area with a lot of spread out communities and regions. We have some areas that are only accessible by ice road or by plane. And so there are just a lot of differences. It's not sort of a city center where we're trying to implement a shift. And so we had to live what we were trying to implement, and we had to be really, really flexible. And we had to kind of embrace the concept of failing forward and trying things and really finding champions and working with people across the North and on the ground and service users and providers alike. And so to implement this type of system transformation, such a huge degree, it took really strong and valued partnerships with a lot of different people. So as I mentioned, people who are using the services, but also the providers. It took Step Care Solutions and the Mental Health Commission teams to help kind of guide implementation. We had a bunch of people here at the Department of Health and Social Services, and then our colleagues at the authorities, and just a lot of teamwork for sure. We also had really great support from leadership, which is really important. We were able to really shift policies right away, right at the onset, which allowed then the changes in practice to occur without additional barriers in place when there's already a lot of change happening. And just a lot of focus on communications and training and trying to get a lot of different things out there for people. So we had things like a biweekly newsletter that we started to email out to service providers and other stakeholders internally and externally. We had an email strictly dedicated to Step Care 2.0. We had regular trainings and orientations and mentorship meetings and identified champions. And despite all of that, we learned that we needed even more. And it just wasn't enough communication. And kind of in retrospect, we've had a lot of ideas about how we could have maybe elevated that a bit or done more, even more. We thought we were doing a lot at the time, but it's a big change. And so it required a lot of communication and ongoing. So I think that might've been one of the biggest lessons learned.
I think that's fantastic. It's amazing how, when you're trying to create a change, how essential communication becomes, and the fact that saying it once or twice is just not enough for people to really deeply understand it, resonate with it, because we're all different and different people need to hear things in different ways to be able to really catch on to it.
It was interesting to see how, you know, in a meeting or in a team building activity or in some kind of mentorship activity, we would talk about something and it seemed to make sense. But then when you get on the ground and to implementation or operational side of things, it got really complicated and it wasn't as simple as we initially thought. And so there was a lot of problem solving, and we learned a lot for sure. And we were really grateful for all the people that came together and the patience and the kind of grit that it took to really create this change and make a difference for people who are accessing services. So, but lots of lessons learned there for sure. Yeah.
I think that's a super important point that, you know, sometimes you're in a room or at a table or in a Zoom and you're discussing this idea and theoretically it all comes together. It all makes good sense. It's super clear process from A to B. But then when you actually go to do it, there's whole bunch of things that even though you tried to think of everything, it just didn't come up in conversation before it happened. And being able to work through that, I think, is an incredible sign of resilience and determination, and in terms of just trying to make change happen and really, really understanding the goal of why those changes are being pushed through and why, you know, the problem solving is so important as a part of that.
Yeah, for sure. And we're still doing that. I think that will just be an ongoing piece of this, right? As we continue to try and enhance our services and supports and the way our system functions, we're kind of doing that all the time and getting better and better at it, hopefully.
Continuous improvement, right? You never reach the end goal.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder what the response has been from those who actually work in the system. And then if you could talk a little bit about the response as well from those who use the system. So those who work in it as well as those who use it.
Yeah, so we've had very varied responses from service providers. We've had some really strong champions of StepCare 2.0 and the shifts. And we've had a lot of people say, this is sort of what I'm already doing. And it's really great to have the support from leadership or the support within policy to function this way. And it's opened up doors or made things a little bit more accessible for people in terms of implementing and operationalizing how they've seen the work needing to happen in their own communities or regions. And then we've had a lot of hesitation too on the other side of things. So we've discovered that a lot of times, though, this hesitation has kind of been born out of a bit of a misunderstanding of what the services are. So we found one at a time approach to counseling, something that was really tricky for some of us to understand and to grasp. And people sort of had a misunderstanding that this meant people could only come once. And so there was a lot of sort of change management around that, or a lot of increased training or trying to communicate what is meant by that. But yeah, there was a little bit of hesitation for some people to function this way. I think this also relates to sort of that traditional gold standard of care that is kind of out there in the world, where we think that in this field, the gold standard of care is ongoing counseling appointments for a certain period of time for several sessions, right? And I think what we like about StepCare is that we really want to examine that and identify what works for each individual person, instead of sort of assigning this one pathway to care and this is the one way to approach this specific challenge. We've really opened that up and allowed people to tell us what works for them and to offer a variety of support. But that was challenging for some people within our system, from what we've heard. I think for service users, we've heard really positive responses from service users, some of it informal. I know we've had people come up to us, different team members come up and say, oh my gosh, my daughter accessed Strongest Families Institute. I don't know if you know what that is, because they don't know, you know, that we work with them, but it changed my daughter's life. And where she once was unable to go to school, she's now really engaged and loving it and able to access schooling and just her peers and things like that, where before she wasn't. So we're hearing really positive experiences about, you know, the e-mental health initiatives that we've implemented as a part of this system change. And we've heard a lot of really positive responses about access to care. So people are saying, their experiences just accessing counseling has been vastly different than it was previously, where they're able to get in when and where they need. They're not sitting on wait lists for extended period of time. We've even heard from service providers outside of our system saying they can tell that something has shifted and that there's been a really positive change when they're, you know, making referrals or helping people get access to support. So it's kind of a variety of things. And I think it's all to be expected with change management and a system change or a system transformation of this degree, where, you know, there's some hesitation in different ways, which is completely fair. And then there's also really positive responses. And we're seeing that not only in people's testimonials and feedback, but also in like satisfaction survey work that we've done, and even just waitlist reductions and access to the actual appointments or actual drop-in services.
I enjoy hearing about the responses, both positive and negative, from service users, service providers, because as you mentioned, change is always a little bit challenging for folks, and people will always have some mixed responses. But it sounds like you also received some really great responses, especially the stories from the people accessing care is really inspiring. And I'm sure it's inspiring for you to hear as well.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think some of the greatest challenges have been so far? And maybe a little bit about how you've dealt with those challenges or faced those challenges.
I think the first thing that comes to mind today when you ask that question is sort of around that change management piece and how to operationalize this framework. So I think those are the areas that we had the hardest time, where, you know, we were in a meeting or in a mentorship sort of activity with people, and we were talking about how to make this shift, but then on the ground operationalizing it was quite challenging. So how do we manage waitlists, and how do we suddenly move from a appointment-based counseling office to now offering drop-in and same-day appointments, as well as potentially ongoing appointments for people that, you know, want to pursue that route? So operationalizing that piece was really challenging in different areas. And like I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, the North is so different. So different areas and regions and communities have such a different setting. And so operationalizing this in a bigger center might look completely different than operationalizing this in a smaller community. And so we were seeing all the differences in how to do that work and trying to support how we could, also not being there on the ground, right? And so, yeah, it was a lot of that was tricky, the operationalizing of it. And then again, that communication, it's become so clear that we could have done more and more and more of that, even though we thought we were doing quite a bit at the time.
Those are all such important things to mention as a part of such a massive change. The change management piece is really tough. And again, moving from that theory and the idea into operationalizing. And I love how you mentioned how it's such the contexts across the Northwest Territories are so diverse that what worked in one area may not work the same way in another area. So always being open to sort of tweaking things and modifying things and problem solving as folks face challenges, knowing that you can't physically be there in every location, but trying to work through that and figure that out. I can imagine that must have been really challenging, but at the same time, maybe exciting as well.
I think we have a lot of like the frontline workers and the managers and supervisors at that ground level were just such champions for that work, right? And that couldn't have been done from our office over here, right? We really relied on them to tell us what was happening and where the challenges were and how to then solution find together and identify ways that we could really make this work in a way that was meaningful for everybody. We're still doing that work, right? There's always, you know, so much to do in this area.
Champions on the ground are so important and so instrumental to the entire change, to the entire system, really. Folks who are clearly communicating, who are really driven to provide the best possible service and to support people to do that are so important.
Absolutely.
What have you found to be the most exciting parts of this implementation and the most exciting parts of this work?
I think what's been most exciting is seeing the way it's shifted. I mentioned how we went from just having this one pathway to care available to people to now having many. So we've implemented several e-mental health initiatives, that people can use, you know, on their own or in combination with other supports, counseling support. We've opened up same day drop-in counseling appointments while still providing those continuous appointments if needed. We've shifted our policies so that we can support the staff in the work that they're doing. We've removed a bunch of precursors to care. So that whole process where people were engaging in an intake appointment and then completing, you know, a lengthy biopsychosocial assessment as a precursor to care, we removed those, and people can still do assessments. They're just not required before you actually get help. And so now what we're seeing is that we're a system that when somebody comes for help, the first thing they receive is help versus all these kind of check boxes. And it seems so simple, but it's so huge. And we really recognize that access has been a major barrier for a lot of people. And so we've just really tried to open that up. And there's a lot more work in that area to do as well, but we're really excited to keep doing it and really passionate about making sure that options fit what people are looking for. And, you know, people can access help and support when and where they need it. We saw a massive reduction in wait times, and our report talks about a 79% reduction. And so we can see that people aren't just waiting for care and getting calls, you know, months later saying, hey, did you want to still attend a counseling appointment? And people have completely forgotten about it or aren't doing well anymore because we just hadn't been available when they needed it. And that to us just isn't meaningful. And so we've really been able to turn that around, and again, still working to do better all the time, just to make these supports valuable and meaningful to people.
Those are all really exciting achievements. I can imagine the amount of work that went into all of these achievements from so many different people involved in so many different ways, from the e-mental health initiatives that were sort of added into the system to enhance services that were available and increase access, you know, many different pathways offering counseling that same day. And something that you mentioned that really struck me is, you know, the first thing that people now can access is help. And I think that's so powerful and so important. And I think all people who work in this industry or work in any area related to people, that is the primary goal, is to help people when they need help.
Yeah.
And so the fact that that's happening more and more in the Northwest Territories is absolutely amazing achievement. Yeah. So I think that that's really exciting.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that you said, you know, you mentioned continuing to work on different things because it's an ongoing journey. There's no end point, you know, there's only progress and then continuous improvement from there. So I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about what your hopes are for as you move forward.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things we've done as a part of this implementation was create communications materials, and they all kind of have the same look and feel. And one of the things we identified early on was that we may have supports out there, but if people don't know about them, they're also not accessible. And so we really took a lot of time to create some materials with the help of people with lived and living expertise and different divisions and people across our system. And we created these materials that we can actually get out there to the public now on a regular basis. We've communicated more regularly and consistently and come up with a communications plan to do that throughout the year. And we're continuing to build on this. So we've recently created a testimonial video of somebody who accessed the EHN online wagon app for addictions recovery, which is really beautifully done. And we've created sort of materials that talk about what e-mental health initiatives are available to them or how to access support or just a variety of materials. So we're going to continue that work for sure. A huge part of what we want to do here is community engagement and partnerships. So that's been a part of the work before we were even implementing StepCare 2.0, but we wanted to hear what was happening for people and what their experiences were. And we want to continue to do that in a really consistent and thoughtful way moving forward. So we want to hear and listen to what is needed, build relationships, form partnerships, and continue to do that work. The program promotion and support and engagement, again, just really trying to reach as many people as possible and keep that consistent message available. We want to implement an integrated electronic method. So we don't currently have an electronic system for data collection. So that's a goal for us. We have a whole other division working on that, but we also want to implement some measurement-based tracking, and we're pretty close to having that implemented, and then we'll really engage on that. So a lot of focus around sort of quality improvement and continuous improvement moving forward. Yeah, and just really leveraging different supports that are out there. So online services, peer support, elders, just really engaging and working with community and in our services and trying to create something that's more sustainable and accessible for people across the North and more.
And more, exactly. It doesn't end, right? And I think it's all so exciting to continue to pursue and to work on recognizing that, hey, we've made some progress here, but we're going to keep going and we're going to keep enhancing and with the goal of being able to support people even better, to support people more, to provide care first every time. And so I think, you know, some of the things that you mentioned about communications and offering some measurement-based tracking and all of those types of things are so exciting in terms of being able to create some sustainability with the progress that has been made and continuously improve and enhance, because the work is never really done. I also love that you mentioned, you know, continuously engaging folks and generating increasing relationships and increasing partnerships so that the system reflects the people who are using it, the people who are working in it, and is really the best that it can be.
Absolutely. And I think we have an opportunity now. I mean, we call it this final report that we've released, but it's really just the beginning. It's a final report of initial implementation, and it's really just the beginning. And so I think with having for the first time brought up e-mental health initiatives, you know, that are free and available to all residents in the North, we have an opportunity to see how that's landing for people and, you know, what's missing or is something not quite fitting and do we need to make some adjustments or, you know, and just really embracing that concept of failing forward or being responsive to what the need is and going there.
I love that. Always learning, always growing and recognizing when, hey, you know what, we might be able to do this a bit better. I wonder what we can do. This is a good lesson learned.
Yeah.
And really exciting about the final report of the initial implementation that has recently come out. We will definitely put that link in the show notes as well so that folks can go and check out some of the great impacts and lessons learned in the Northwest Territories when it comes to the StepCare 2.0 implementation. Is there anything else that, you know, you wanted to share? Anything else, any other experiences that you just kind of wanted to highlight?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of, I mean, there's so much. I feel like our team of people here could talk about this forever because it's just been so, there's so much to it. There's so much work to it. I think the biggest thing, we're just so grateful for all these relationships. We've formed really good, like years of relationships, you know, with the e-mental health vendors that we've worked with and with Peter Cornish and Emery Churchill and all the people at the Mental Health Commission and the other StepCare Solutions individuals and our frontline staff. And we just have, there's just such a feeling of gratitude, I think, among my unit here who has kind of led this initiative and the NTHSSA. It really does take a lot of people to create such a shift in the way we provide care. And so I think, yeah, just huge thanks and gratitude to the people who have really given a lot and put a lot into this work. I think it has been really life-changing. It's for sure completely shifted the system in a way that people can access more easily and more meaningfully. And we're just continuing down that path. And so I think there's a lot of potential and a lot of shifts continuously coming our way, which is, yeah, we're really excited about it and passionately working away over here. And we'll continue to do so for a long time.
Thank you so much for sharing, Carly. We appreciated having you here on the SOI podcast today. And we hope maybe in the future down the road, we might have you on again as things unfold.
Yeah, I would love to.
Thank you once again for joining us on the So Why podcast with StepCare Solutions. For more information on the StepCare 2.0 model, the Wellness Together Canada portal, as well as links to resources mentioned in this episode, please check out the show notes below. Thanks for tuning in once again. We look forward to having you back next time.